The moon was full that night, glowing down on Alcmene as she laid her beautiful newborn son Hercules in his crib and smoothed his pale hair. She kissed his forehead, admiring him as he slept gently, his breathing deep and restful. She blew out the candle beside his bed and retired down the hallway to her own room, content and exhausted. As the baby slumbered peacefully, two snakes slithered in through the open window. Under the pale glimmer of moonlight, they made their way down the wall and across the room to the baby. The two serpents wound around the crib's railing, intertwining like malevolent ropes, circling the infant and hissing, preparing to strike. As their scales slid against his skin, the baby groggily opened his eyes and became vaguely aware of the reptiles in his bed. He reached out and touched them, fascinated by the glittering scales. The two snakes began to wind around the infant's neck. The baby choked and grabbed the snakes, who were unafraid of the baby's grip. But slowly, the infant squeezed harder and harder, and the snake's eyes began to bulge out of their heads. The baby, who could barely fit his tiny hands around the snakes, kept gripping tighter and tighter until... I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales. Today, I'm sharing the epic Greco-Roman myth of Hercules. The name Hercules is synonymous with strength and power. His name has become an adjective for achieving the impossible, a Herculean task. But that's not all that Hercules was known for. The real story of Hercules was much more tragic and brutal. The legends about Hercules' feats and adventures could fill a large tome. But today we're going to share the story of a cursed man. The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the story of Hercules is bloody and gruesome. Please exercise caution for children under 13. If you want to hear more tales, you can find episodes on your favorite podcast directory. While you're there, feel free to make our day by leaving a 5-star review. A new episode will release every other Saturday, so if you enjoy it, subscribe. While we'll be using the Roman name for our hero, the original Greek name was Heracles, which ironically means glorious gift of Hera, after the goddess who despised him above all else. Not only did the name alter slightly when he moved from Greek lore to Roman, but some of the elements that we have come to know Hercules by were added at this time. In the original Greek myths, Hercules was not a strapping beefcake with large muscles and an imposing frame. His physique was quite normal, which was why he was so magical. His abilities came from his superhuman demigod status, not his physical body. Regardless of how you see this famous warrior, today we share the story of suffering and redemption, a man cursed by a vengeful goddess who withstood hardship more than any normal man could bear, a sympathetic, mythic hero. Zeus famously had dalliances with many mortal women, but he found Hercules' mother, Alcmene, irresistible. Alcmene was praised by the poets as the tallest and most beautiful woman. She was wise and kind, and while she was as comely as Aphrodite, she was deeply faithful to her husband, Amphitryon. No one could take her from his side. Because of this, Zeus took the form of Amphitryon while Alcmene's husband was out of town. Wearing Amphitryon's face, Zeus explained he had arrived home early. Excited to see her husband, Alcmene eagerly took Zeus to bed. Zeus was long gone when the real Amphitryon returned home the next day, but he watched as Alcmene told her husband about how pleased she was over their lovemaking the night before. In shock, Amphitryon told her that it was not he that had been there the night before. When they realized that the great god of all had been the one to seduce her in disguise, Amphitryon agreed to raise any child as his own, so as not to displease the gods. Zeus was pleased with this turn of events. His union with Alcmene did bear fruit. It created Hercules. Up in the heights of Mount Olympus, Zeus's wife Hera was furious about Alcmene's pregnancy. It was one thing to cheat, it was another to allow a demigod bastard to come out of it. She, a goddess, now looked like a fool. Hera tried to prevent the baby from being born, but as she was plotting a way to end the pregnancy, she fell into a deep slumber. Some say one of the other gods cast a spell to protect the unborn child, while some say her endless wrath exhausted her. Hera awoke to a painful, wet tugging. A strange child suckled at her breast, a half-human child. Hermes, the winged messenger, must have brought Zeus's bastard infant to nurse while she slept. Zeus was certainly behind this violation. With the milk of a goddess, this baby would one day achieve immortality. Once she realized what was happening, Hera flung tiny Hercules aside. Her milk spilled across the sky, becoming a cluster of stars that we know today as the Milky Way. Unfortunately, the babe survived. But Hera wasn't going to give up so easily. Shortly thereafter, she sent poisonous snakes into Hercules' crib, which the baby quickly strangled. Hera would have to plot something else. Alcmene did what she could to protect her son from the treacherous goddess, although she didn't have to worry too much about it. If anything, even as a toddler, her young boy demonstrated strength and intelligence far beyond his age. No boy could match him. He began learning things that no children his age were doing. Amphitryon taught him how to drive a chariot. Autolycus, son of Hermes, taught Hercules how to wrestle. And Aretas, king of Oechalia, a revered bowman throughout the lands, taught Hercules the art of archery. This child was Alcmene's pride and joy, more impressive every day. Castor, known for his equestrian skills, educated Hercules on the art of war. Hercules learned many skills that would serve him well in the battlefield, including swordplay. And while his many tutors instructed him in tangible skills, he also learned the customs of his culture. He was taught how to be a virtuous citizen and the merits of being just and impartial. Alcmene couldn't wait to see what her son would achieve. Finally, Hercules was sent to school to learn music, art, and literature from Linos, the son of Apollo. But Hercules had his father's temper, and his physical strength only made his explosive outbursts more dangerous for those around him. This was particularly pronounced when Hercules was attempting something that he did not have a natural aptitude for. This happened so rarely that he was often taken aback when he didn't get something flawlessly the first time around, and it infuriated him. Hercules sat at a table in the massive music room, looking up at his tutor, Linos, who was frowning down at him. Hercules was an apt pupil, but he didn't pick up the lyre quite as quickly as the other students. Even though he was already a young man of discipline at the age of 15, music was not his strong suit. "Hercules!" Linos called out loudly. The other boys turned to look at him. This was not the first time Linos had chastised him in front of the other students.
"Pay attention! You're falling behind the others!"
"I have it, I swear!"
Hercules' face turned red. Getting called out for being inferior to anyone was not something that he was used to. He could feel his cheeks grow hot, and it embarrassed him.
Then play that passage from memory. Stand up.
Hercules stood up, feeling the eyes of his classmates upon him. He held his lyre awkwardly. As he looked around the room, he knew that he didn't know it, and he was furious that he was going to be humiliated again. He stared at Linos, and all he could see was his smug smile, ready to taunt him. He knew that people saw him as too young to be so strong. He was too intimidating, too handsome. He knew that even older men, men in their prime, were threatened by him. As if possessed by the gods themselves, Hercules dropped his lyre and rushed towards Linos without even fully realizing what he was doing. He gripped his teacher's neck with both hands. Hercules wasn't even trying that hard, and yet tears were streaming down Linos's face, and the blood vessels in his forehead were throbbing and straining. His classmates watched on in disbelief at the sight in front of them. Everyone was too frightened to say anything. No one could move. Linos slowly turned purple as Hercules squeezed tighter. Hercules had never had his hands around a man's bare neck before, and he was shocked that Linos was so easy to choke. Finally, he decided that his teacher had had enough. He let the man go, and he began wheezing. Hercules felt embarrassment and looked at his teacher in horror. I'm sorry, Hercules stammered. Linos looked at him cruelly.
You're pathetic, you bastard son. No wonder Hera wants you dead.
Without thinking twice, Hercules grabbed his lyre and smashed it over the man's head. The man fell to the floor with a thud. Linos was dead. Our story will continue in a moment after the break. And now, back to Tales. Hercules stood over the dead body of his teacher, the son of Apollo. This was not going to go over well with the gods. Not all demigods had the physical prowess Hercules possessed, and not all of them had suckled from the breast of a goddess, giving them a chance at immortality. No, Linos was gone for good. His classmate Artemis looked at him with a horrified expression. Before Hercules knew it, he was surrounded by sentinels, his other professors. They had him cornered and surrounded. Not that he wanted to fight these men anyway. He knew he had made a grave mistake. His temper had gotten the best of him. Hercules hung his head. Hera watched with glee. She couldn't have done a better job if she had planned it herself. Murdering his own tutor, son of Apollo. What an idiot. It did sound exactly like something the son of Zeus would do, though. The apple didn't fall too far from the tree. She hoped Apollo would end Hercules right there. But Amphitryon, that imbecile of a man, pled with the gods for Hercules' life. Why Amphitryon chose to protect the reminder of his wife's indiscretion was beyond her. But either way, Hercules was banished to Mount Cithaeron. Though Hercules would live, the gods declared he should learn from this. Hercules would live alone on a cold, remote mountain, where he was forced to stay until he turned the age of 18. Then he could become a free man again. Hercules' time on Cithaeron was Hera's opportunity. She would send violent storms, predatory animals, and yet Hercules was able to withstand all of the abuse. It infuriated her, and she paced Mount Olympus irritably. The other gods and goddesses avoided her. As Hercules jumped out of another lightning bolt's path, he sighed, looking up at the sky. When would the vengeful deity leave him alone? Why was she more furious with him than her husband? Each day he would tend the cattle. It was a dull task, and he felt it was beneath him, but he tried to find comfort in the solitude. Even though he was so full of power and energy, he often felt like he might burst out of his own skin. Hercules missed his mother terribly. The mountain's climate was brutal, cold, but the hard labor was easy for him. He became even stronger, more powerful. The isolation was difficult for Hercules, but he bore his punishment with dignity. He would pay his debt to Apollo. On one unusually placid and sunny day, as Hercules sat on a rock observing the grazing cows, he noticed two willowy wisps coming towards him, shadowy figures floating as if they were airy nymphs. But were they friend or foe? He stood at attention at the sight of the interlopers, ready to fend off anyone who dared to steal cattle from the herd. But as they got closer, he saw that they were etheric, not of this world, like apparitions of goddesses.
"Greetings, Hercules."
One of them slid her arm around his waist as she sidled up to him. She was pale blue, and her hair whipped in the breeze like it was the wind itself. It sent a chill up his spine.
"You can call me Vice."
The other, the paler, more serene one, settled in front of him, supplicant. There was a gentle quality in her voice when she spoke.
"And you shall know me as Virtue."
Vice whispered in his ear. It almost sounded like a snake's hiss.
"We see you here toiling away every day. We see you wondering what the future will hold."
Hercules furrowed his brow. Who was watching him up on this desolate mountain? Who was reading his thoughts? Vice smiled mischievously, as if reading them now. Virtue looked up at him with wide eyes. She had no pupils, just a swirling ocean of clouds where they should be, an oracle disguising the future. Hercules tried to peer further into the opaque orbs, but she blinked and the murky clouds disappeared.
"You are almost 18, and when you leave here, you will start your adult life."
Vice ran a red-hot finger along Hercules' forearm.
"What do you want for yourself, Hercules?"
I... Hercules stammered. He was unprepared for these kinds of questions, these kinds of beings visiting him out of nowhere.
"You have a choice," Virtue said firmly.
Hercules regarded them both.
"If you choose my path," Vice smiled seductively, "you will have an easy life, a pleasant, most enjoyable journey. Doesn't that sound nice?"
Hercules regarded her carefully. He wasn't sure what that meant, but he knew that he didn't want to kill any more people. He didn't want to be punished again and suffer alone on a mountaintop, watching cattle all day. Her proposition sounded like a reasonable choice. Suddenly, Virtue stroked his hand gently.
"If you choose my path, you will have a severe life, a life of hardship and misunderstanding. But it will be a life of glory and redemption, an uncommon life, one that not every man is willing to undertake, a road that only the most valiant are willing to walk."
"Choose me, Hercules,"
Vice giggled into his ear.
"Don't make life so hard."
Hercules stared into the eyes of Virtue, whose pupils had once again grown cloudy. He could begin to see his future in them. There was a beautiful woman, the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. But she quickly disappeared, and a fire replaced the image of the woman. Death, destruction.
"Oh no, do you see that too?"
Vice spoke in mock horror.
"You don't want that."
And yet Hercules could hear the words coming out of his mouth as if someone else was speaking.
"I choose you."
He reached out to touch Virtue's hand, and a slow smile crept across her lips. He gazed into the abyss of her eyes, searching for the woman he had seen. Would he ever see her again? Who was she? Suddenly, he felt as if he was swirling in the abyss himself. He was hypnotized, like he was caught in a whirlpool that was going to suck him down. Had he made the wrong choice? Had he made a decision that would haunt him forever? Hercules startled awake and opened his eyes. He had accidentally fallen asleep, and the herd had scattered. Cross with himself for dozing, he raced off to round up the stray cattle. As he hastily got back to his duties, he couldn't help but wonder if he had just dreamt the entire episode with vice and virtue. When Hercules descended the mountain at the age of 18, he was more handsome than he had ever been, a true son of Zeus, a man. He was ready to find a wife and become the great warrior on the battlefield that he knew he was meant to be. As he quickly returned home, eager to reunite with his parents, he came across a group of men from Thebes, the neighboring kingdom. He recognized soldiers of King Erginus of Orchomenus, Minyans. There must have been over 100 of them. He didn't like these people. Bullies. Warmongering. Hercules quickly kept pace with them and pulled up alongside them.
Where are you going?
The men regarded Hercules in his common shepherd's clothing. Hercules noted how he must appear to them.
I am Hercules, son of Zeus. Answer me.
The general quickly rode around the men to Hercules. The general looked like a peasant, but his chin was high. Even though he was average in stature, he carried himself with the posturing of a warrior, a man who knew he would be the victor in any match. The man clearly understood whom he was speaking to.
We know who you are. Since your time away, we have conquered Thebes, and we are en route to Thebes to collect our annual tax of 100 cattle.
A staunch ally of Thebes, Hercules was shocked and angry. The emissaries of King Erginus circled around him. Sure, he was just one man, but his silence made them wary, and they watched him closely. One man angled a spear at him.
Perhaps you should let Thebes keep their cattle,
Hercules said with a smile, baiting them.
And why should we do that? The general sneered.
Hercules didn't move a muscle. The general waved to his men.
Come, looks like the son of Zeus forgot how to fight.
Finally, the men turned away from Hercules, which suddenly enraged him. They were ignoring him as if he were harmless, an annoying fly buzzing in their ear. Hercules pulled out his sword and raised it to the men, who turned back to look at him. He flew at them in a whirl of fury and speed. All of his time spent on Mount Cithaeron had not dulled Hercules' capacities for swordsmanship or archery or prowess in war. He had only gained in speed, agility, and strength. He was indeed a specimen of the gods. The men of King Erginus couldn't believe what was happening. They tried to run, but Hercules was too quick. Not one man would escape his wrath. He obliterated every last one of them. Frustration had built up during his years away, and it was now unleashed in a hellish assault. When every man had perished, Hercules decided to send a message to King Erginus. The son of Zeus was back, and he would not tolerate this. Hercules cut off the noses and ears of the men's bodies and bound their hands behind their backs. He strapped the men to their horses with a note that this was the only tax they would ever get from Thebes. Hercules' name spread like wildfire after his inconceivable feat in Orchomenus. Hercules felt that perhaps this was the life that virtue had intended, and that winning in battle was the hardship she had spoken of. If so, he had come out victorious and could now settle into his life of redemption and glory. Hercules returned to Thebes with much fanfare. He knew that this had redeemed his name after his transgression with Linos. He was a hero. He could feel the adoration washing over him. This was his absolution. As he entered the city, the renowned King Creon greeted him as if he were greeting his own son. He stepped forward on the palace steps as Hercules kneeled before him.
"Hercules, my people owe you a debt of gratitude," King Creon said, indicating for Hercules to rise. "It was my honor, sir, to free this great city of its burdens," Hercules answered humbly. "Your bravery and loyalty does not go unnoticed, son of Zeus. Please accept this gift as a show of gratitude."
King Creon then gestured grandly behind him. Hercules followed his extended hand. His eyes widened in disbelief. Standing a few feet behind King Creon in a gauzy gown was the exquisite woman he had seen in Virtue's swirling whirlpool eyes. She was real.
"This is my beloved daughter, Megara."
King Creon spoke with adoration in his voice.
"Please accept her hand in marriage. She is my greatest treasure, and I know a man of your caliber is the only man worthy of my daughter."
Hercules tried to break his gaze with Megara. She had lowered her lashes at first, but now, intrigued, she hesitantly made eye contact with the ferocious warrior. Hercules could tell that she was just as enchanted with him as he was with her.
"Yes," Hercules said. "Yes, I will take Megara's hand in marriage."
As Hera watched the love-struck man and woman below, she called for Hermes, the winged messenger.
"Hermes, you've been down there. Is Megara as perfect as she seems?"
Hermes shrugged nonchalantly.
"Yes, goddess."
"So, Hercules is going to be very happy."
"Yes, goddess," Hermes replied.
Hera threw a lightning bolt down to the ground, and it accidentally beheaded an innocent centaur frolicking in the woods.
"I will not stand for this," she cried out.
She would make sure that Hercules would not be happy and adored for long. She would not fall asleep again. Our story will continue in a moment after a brief message. And now, back to our story. High up on Mount Olympus, Hera seethed at the happy couple. The wedding between Hercules and Megara was celebrated throughout the land. He, the handsome, beloved hero, she, the comely, noble princess. It made Hera sick. She couldn't stand to watch Hercules find his triumphant path of redemption. Over the next few years, Megara gave birth to a son and a daughter. Hercules and Megara were doting parents, and their days passed peacefully. Hercules was a valued consultant on war strategy, helping to ensure that Thebes would never be overtaken again. Hera hated the entire, relentlessly glowing family. Hercules idolized his son and daughter. They had Zeus's blood in their veins too, and Hera despised them as much as she did the bastard son himself. Finally, she could take it no longer. Megara had just given birth to another son. This woman was proving too fertile for her taste. She couldn't have all of the land be spawned of her husband's seed. That was unacceptable. One night, Hera descended from Mount Olympus, shrouded in a hooded cape so no one would see her. She made her way to Creon's palace and found Hercules slumbering peacefully next to his wife. She thought about plunging a dagger into his neck right then and there, but that would be too quick. There wouldn't be enough pain and suffering. She leaned into his ear and whispered something quickly. She smiled to herself, and quickly made her way back home. The next morning, Hercules woke up not feeling like himself. His head pounded as if he had been drinking copiously, but he knew that was not the case. Megara rolled over in bed and looked at him dreamily. Hercules scowled at her, and her face crinkled in surprise at his hostile expression.
"Is everything all right, husband?"
"Get away from me, you vile witch!"
he screamed at her. Hercules knew that Megara had done something to make him feel so off. Had she poisoned him? It was like he was looking at her for the first time and seeing her clearly. Her pupils were narrowed like snake's eyes. She hissed at him. He couldn't believe she had tricked him into marrying her. He could see her now for what she was, a wretched manipulator who had seduced him into giving her the seed of Zeus. He jumped out of bed. The children must certainly be spawn of Hades. He had been tricked into mixing his bloodline with children of the underworld. They were going to grow up to do horrible things, vile humans who would ruin the world. He must destroy them before it was too late. Hercules raced down the hallway to the nursery where his three children were sleeping peacefully. He snatched them from their beds, easily wrangling all three of them in his arms. Their baby started crying immediately at being handled so roughly.
"Daddy, where are we going?"
Their eldest son rubbed his eyes groggily.
"You're going to a very special place," he said, unable to get rid of these demons quickly enough.
He ran to the kitchen where the morning fire was already burning, boiling water for the day's cooking. Hercules shoved the servants aside. He quickly shoved their eldest son in the fire. He screamed and tried to get out, but Hercules pushed him back in, throwing his daughter along with him. Their clothes were ablaze, their skin blistered and charred. Suddenly, Megara rushed in after him.
"Husband, what are you doing?"
Megara screamed at him, jumping onto his back, trying to pull their infant out of his hands. But she was no match. Hercules easily tossed her off, and she landed hard on the marble floor. Finally, Hercules threw the tiny baby in with the other two. The baby's skull cracked on the wood, killing him instantly. Hercules felt dizzy. The smells were horrible. His headache pounded even louder. Hercules vomited onto the floor, a vile green liquid. As he stared down in a daze, the liquid he had just purged swirled into a puddle and formed Hera's face. Hera's cruel face as she laughed triumphantly, laughed at him. Hercules came to his senses right when it was too late. He could see his children's faces melting. The smell of burning flesh was unbearable, knocking him back into reality. He looked up at Megara's horrified face. She was crying inconsolably. He realized with excruciating anguish that he had just burned their children alive. Thanks for listening to Tales. Next week, we'll continue the tale of Hercules as our tortured hero receives punishment for his unthinkable actions. If you want to listen to more tales, you can find us and subscribe on your favorite podcast directory or listen on parcast.com. If you enjoyed the show, we'd truly appreciate a 5-star review. See you next time. Tales was created by Max Cutler. It is a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Ron Shapiro, with production assistance by Paul Mahler. Additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Carly Madden. Tales is written by Gina Machusek. I'm Vanessa Richardson.